it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get all of our news, analysis, and extra podcasts every week, and so much more. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. NewOrleans.football/subscribe. Get locked in for the whole entire season. We got a film study of Spencer Rattler up right now that you don't want to miss. You can find out about the trade the Saints almost made back in the first round and everything else that happened throughout the draft. We're coming to you from our new studio on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, right next door to Matt Bowers Ford dealership. You need a new car, make sure you go and check him out. Ricci's best car, best prices, best customer care, the best of everything. Make sure you check out one of Matt's mini dealerships if you are in the market for a used or new car. And of course, we're presented by PJ's Coffee, so get your day started every day with them. We got a great show for you guys today. We're going to break down the draft, share our thoughts, get into some UDFA breakdowns, and so much more right after this quick break from our great sponsors. The New Orleans Dot Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company has an outstanding engagement salon. Make sure you go check that out today. If you are getting ready to ask that special question to that special someone, they'll get you right for your big day. And while you're there, check out their Florida lead necklace and earrings that you see on the screen right now. The earrings are priced at $1,100 and the necklace is $1,350. Tell them NOF sent you.
All right, lead topic time. The draft is over with. Now it's time to evaluate. Did the Saints really deserve an A-plus rating for the draft? The Saints draft was almost universally praised by, you know, analysts nationally and locally. But, you know, even Pro Football Focus gave the Saints an A-plus. But did we think it was good, or is it a little too soon to say that it was an A-plus draft?
Well, it's always too soon to say it's anything. We don't really know what it is. And typically, when you end up getting these grades, it's because your draft has followed the consensus. And I think they made a couple picks above where everybody thought people were going to be taken. Like Spencer Rattler ends up going probably two rounds later than everybody thought he was going to go. Yeah. I think the Boyd pick kind of was well behind where he was projected to go. So that was another one that ends up being a win. Kool-Aid was considered a first-rounder by a lot of people. They got him in the second round. Mm-hmm. And then I think they got Fuaga right where he was considered. Bub, I think they got him kind of right around that range where he was supposed to go. So they kind of beat the curve a little bit on a couple picks, and that's how you end up getting that grade. But, you know, I think looking at it, I like the idea of a lot of their picks. I like the theory of it. I like the fact that it was forward-thinking. So I would grade it pretty highly myself. I don't think an A-plus, but, I mean, I think somewhere probably in that B range.
I think you nailed it, first of all, why everyone liked it, because all the books and the websites and everything had these guys rated as going higher, and they got good value on them, and that's how everyone judges these drafts. Like, my gut reaction was I liked it, but, like, I was surprised that this was like an A-plus draft. I mean, Bub Means and Jalen Ford could be really good players. I don't see where they're going to play big roles on this team right away. So we're really talking about the top three picks, I think. Obviously, Fuaga is exactly what they needed. And I think Kool-Aid McKinstry and Spencer Rattler are the two picks that made everyone love this draft. Kool-Aid McKinstry because two reasons. One, I think a lot of people had him going in round one. They get him at 41. But he also kind of proved they weren't reaching. That felt like a best available player pick. Like when we listed the Saints' immediate needs, now we don't know what's going to happen with Marshawn Lattimore, but we were saying offensive line and receiver and defensive end and safety. And they were like, no, we're going to take the corner who should have gone in round one. And it just looked like smart business. They were thinking about 2006 as much as they were thinking about 2004. And then they did that with Spencer Rattler too. It wasn't just that a lot of people had him going in round three and they got him in round five. It just showed, hey, the Saints are pretty forward-thinking, and we haven't seen a forward-thinking Saints team in a long time.
Yeah, even when Bert Breer said that they were looking for a corner like the day before the draft, I was kind of surprised by it, and I didn't fully buy into it. So, yeah, definitely. I think they went up and got him because he fell so far. I heard first-round grades on him. I heard a third-round grade on Rattler from other teams. You know, so I think they ended up getting him where, like, later than he probably should have went. But, yeah, they didn't force anything. And, look, the one thing that I would say, and I think if you're one of the people that are counting down the days for change, I think this draft is kind of a vote of patience. Like, it kind of feels like nobody's doing anything to try to be, like, to maximize today. It feels more about, like, maximizing the long-term health of the franchise.
Everything they've done this offseason makes it feel like
they are not desperate.
They're long-term thinking. Now, you know, we've still talked a lot on here, like, what could Dennis Allen and Derek Carr both survive? But the organization as a whole has agreed, you know, let's reset. And I like it. And my favorite, which was my favorite part of this whole draft, was they did trade up to get McKinstry, but they just traded a fifth and a sixth in a draft where they had a ton of picks on day three. They've got all of their picks for next year except for a day three pick that's still involved in one of their former trades, but they got their first, second, third, fourth next year. You know, they waited at 14. They even waited on Rattler. I mean, I could not believe they waited through rounds three and four. So just a lot of things feel like the Saints just have an awareness of who they are. Although I will say, if we go back to the pre-draft show, I predicted them drafting a corner in round two. The only reason I didn't pick Kool-Aid is because I thought it was going to go too high. I almost nailed it.
Look, my only thing against them making that trade, though, is I think two of my favorite picks were in the fifth round of this. What if they hit on another guy there? And we don't know if they hit on anyone, but I don't think that there's been a more exciting fifth round pick in NFL history than Spencer Rattler. Like, that is just an unbelievable fifth round pick. This guy that people were talking about being at the top of the draft, you know, a few years ago, and now he's available in the fifth. I mean, I love it. I love the Boyd pick. I think they did a good job in those rounds. We're going to see, you know, it's always
of
comes
all
out.
The picks, Boyd probably filled a need more than any other pick since Fuaga in round one. But quickly on Rattler, I want to hear your thoughts on him because you just did the film study on him and we don't want to give that all away. That's, you got to check out New Orleans Football. That's what you subscribe for. That's what Nick does best and has always done best. But I think the discussion around Rattler is so different because he's a fifth rounder. I feel like if they traded, you know, next year's second to get into round three and traded Rattler and drafted Rattler, or if they just had a third and drafted Rattler, I think it'd be met with so much more skepticism. Getting him in round five makes everyone, it's the same player with the same upside, with the same, hey, maybe 2 years from now he could be their next starter after Derek Carr. But for some reason, getting him in fifth makes them feel like geniuses, and getting him in round three, I think some people would think it was reckless. It's crazy how much that changes the tone of the conversation, because I've seen almost universal praise for that.
I would like to pick in any round, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, not first round or whatever, but like a third round pick, I still would have liked to pick. I like the idea. I've been saying it for, you know, damn near a decade now. I like the idea of taking a quarterback almost every single year. I think especially in that range, there's just so much opportunity to catch lightning in the bottle for like a very, very low cost. And catching lightning in a bottle is damn near impossible. You know, you don't get struck by lightning really ever. So except for the guy in Benjamin Button that got struck like seven times in that movie. But I mean, it just doesn't happen. But
wasn't that The Great Outdoors with John Candy?
But yeah, I think you know, I think it's a good value pick. But look, my conclusion on that story, I think that there's just so much negativity around him because he went from a highly acclaimed player to somebody that wasn't highly acclaimed. So instead of looking at him and saying, like, he does these things well, there's a predisposition, I think, to be like, well, he can't do this, he can't do that, he can't do this. Whereas if you're drafting someone in the second, third round, you're just kind of looking at him, you're like, oh, he's, like, good at these things, and if he develops, he could become this. And I think that that's hurt him a lot. And I think it even hurt him in the slide. Like, I think it was more than QB1. I think he's just somebody that you've become so predisposed to see every single flaw because he was once considered like a potential number one pick in the draft. And then now he's a guy that's just fallen. It's like, well, what's wrong with him? Oh, I don't want to touch him. So I think that kind of hurts him a little bit. It's just kind of the perception is already kind of set. So, but man, when you watch him, the first line in the story is Spencer Rattler is going to look different than all the other quarterbacks when they line up this summer, because like he throws, like, I think he has one of the best arms I've ever looked at. And there's so much more to playing quarterback than arm. Jameis has a great arm. Like, there's so much more to playing quarterback than just being able to throw the ball. But his arm is unbelievable. And I think when we're looking at routes on air, when you aren't really looking at quarterback stuff, like, he's going to be throwing the ball and he's going to look different than Derek Carr. And it's going to be like, wow, this guy can like really, he can really spin it. And I think he's exciting. I think there's a ton of stuff he has to do better. We break it all down, all the stuff he needs to do better. But I think there's a ton of stuff he does well too. And you know, I think it's going to take some time, but he has a chance. Like, I think he has a real chance of becoming an NFL starter one day if everything comes together.
I mean, the chat is saying that the Saints, they're giving the grade between B-plus and A-plus. So I think that that's, you know, kind of consistent with what y'all saying. But, you know, you talk about Rattler. I think it's safe to say he's your favorite day three pick.
I mean, I don't – the upside there is unbelievable. I mean, they got a quarterback where, again, I think the odds of him becoming a starter, like anyone taken in that range, the odds are long. Mm. It just is. Like, if you're there, you're getting taken a lot earlier if the league agrees with it, regardless of your flaws. So there's enough flaw there for it to be less likely than likely. But yeah, I like it. I mean, I see a path where it's possible. I think I would be shocked if he doesn't beat out Haener for the backup spot this year. I mean, I think he's that good, and they're both starting from an even spot now. It's not like Haener has this like year in the system and he's going to come in with this like built-in knowledge and now Rattler's playing catch-up. They're starting from the same place. You know, Haener has the edge of being an NFL quarterback for a year, knowing how stuff works, knowing where the meeting room is, knowing how to study, all that stuff. So there's a little bit of an edge, but I think Spencer's a more talented player.
It's a brand new offense for both of them.
Yeah, yeah. They're both hitting it and trying to run from the same starting point. And I think Rattler's going to be able to.
But you think they're the two? You think Carr and the young guys? Or you think pick a young guy and you pick a veteran?
No, I think both of them guys are gone, man. I think they're both gone.
The rest of this round, like I said, Christian Boyd, he almost has the cleanest path to playing time, and I don't think it'll be a lot of playing time, but I mean, you said it how many times sitting in that chair that I think you might have said fifth round. They got him in the sixth round because they got an A-plus draft, you kept saying in the fifth round draft your nose tackle, and there you go. Yep. You got your next Tyler Davidson, you got your next Malcolm Roach. They got him in the sixth round, so the value was really good. But that you can get that guy, and this guy is just a massive behemoth, has the experience, has, you know, I mean, it feels like he should be part of the rotation as a run stuffer, and that fills the biggest need. Bub Means, obviously, physical pass catcher. I don't know that he can get snaps ahead of A.T. Perry and Cedric Wilson right away. That'll be interesting to see, but the most interesting guy that they drafted to me on day three, besides them, is Jalen Ford from Texas. Because he is, like, if you just read all their bios, you're like, oh, so that guy went fifth in the draft. Like, he was the starting Mike linebacker, team captain, green dot guy for the team in the college football playoff four that turned their program around, you know, obviously first team all conference and getting all American love, 220 tackles over the last 2 years, forced 10 turnovers over the last 2 years. Yeah. Just such a polished guy. Now, there's just no path. Like, they've got Demario Davis, they've got Pete Werner and Willie Gay fighting for a job. So he could be a future plan to replace one of those guys. But in the meantime, playing special teams. But just talking to him on Zoom or whatever, you realize, oh yeah, this guy was like the star of Texas football's defense. And they just, like, you don't normally see that from a fifth round pick, you know, like they picked like DeMarco Jackson around the same area. I just feel like this guy, like the same thing, like Jalen Ford and Spencer Rattler feel like third round picks to me.
I agree. Look, I think Boyd might take like a year to kind of really settle in. Like the curve is so far for him. I mean, I'm excited about his potential, but I think it's going to take him a little bit of time. So I would probably put, on the excitement meter, day three picks, I think I would probably put Ford ahead of him.
Yeah. Let's go back to day two. Like Mike alluded to earlier, they traded up to get Kool-Aid McKinstry. So where do you think Kool-Aid McKinstry fits in the secondary?
I think he fits where somebody's already standing. I mean, I think someone might fall out of that, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't trade up to take him in the second round to have him sit behind somebody else. He has the traits, I think, to play inside, too. I mean, I think everybody's on notice. I think it's a wide-open competition. I think it's open to the possibility of trading Marshawn if they get the right offer. Now, you don't really have to think about, like, what does this do to the season? It's just you're moving on. You're moving on to the future at that point. And it would be tough to see Marshawn go, but I think that the door is more open than it was on just considering the possibility. I still don't think they're going to get the offer they want, right. But if it comes, and maybe it goes, you know, into training camp, into the season. I mean, either one of them guys could get traded, honestly. Like, you have the replacement now. You're probably moving on from one of them. You aren't paying everybody. You drafted Kool-Aid, so you don't have to pay somebody.
Yep.
Somebody's on their way out. It's just who and how soon do they want to do it?
Yeah, man, I wish I could get a better read on Marshawn. I really don't think this was a signal that the Saints have already decided they're pushing him out the door. I think that door is still open. I think a lot of it depends on where Marshawn's head has had. And Dennis Allen was just so blunt talking about it. He's like, yeah, I haven't talked to Marshawn. And he's like, but that's not new. I normally don't talk to Marshawn. I mean, I think he's just being open and blunt about, like, if Marshawn wants to be here, yeah, we want that great cornerback. But if he doesn't, you know, we're making preparations for all possibilities. I think at some point it's probably incumbent on Marshawn to let them know, like, are you part of this team or not? And I think that will probably start around the time of rookie minicamp. But if Marshawn, Lattimore, and Paulson Adebo are here and they're not traded, those guys are probably starting on the outside. And I think that puts Alante Taylor on notice in the meantime, inside. I will give Nick his flowers here. I was trying to find the exact number of stats. I mean, we're looking up stats on Kool-Aid McKinstry, and he basically played like inside none. Like it was double-digit snaps in his career playing in the slot. It was almost exclusively outside. Nick watches the tape on his computer, sitting next to us in the draft room for about 20 minutes, and then he goes, "I see a guy that can play inside." And then later, when we talked to the coach, we really see a guy that can play inside here. Like he recognized, and that was the Saints' vision for him. Like, they're going to start him outside that, and with the ability to move inside. But if he's trying to get his way on the field and Marshawn Lattimore and Paulson Adebo are there, it's almost a prediction to think he could beat out Alante Taylor. Or Alante Taylor needs to show just rapid growth after he has the year head start playing in the slot.
It's good to have the competition. I mean, so I seen a graphic today. I think Bappa put it out, and it was just kind of all the DBs that they've drafted over the years. And it's just, it's a hit list, man. Yeah. And it's first round, fifth round. I mean, it's just they hit on them so often. So if they like somebody in the secondary and they take them and they're showing you that they covet them, like, I'm all in on that guy. And, you know, I almost feel like the conversation around Kool-Aid, it was just kind of like he was considered too good for too long. It almost became one of them things because, like, for the longest time, he's a first rounder. He's the best cornerback in the SEC. It's all this stuff. And then it's just kind of like, you know, how you just start picking people apart. And I think he just kind of got picked apart over time. I like him. I think they got great value with it. I like to trade up even. I know we were talking about before coming in, like, don't make any of those trades. I don't know. It's just kind of getting him. It just kind of felt like a steal a little bit. So I like that they jumped on the opportunity. And I think just having him there kind of takes a lot of the stress and the pressure out of, like, the whole secondary picture. Because, again, like, if Marshawn goes, it doesn't mean your season's over. I think you still have a strong secondary without him. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they do.
I don't know if you could go wrong picking up one of Saban's last great products. You know what I mean? So that'll lead us into our next segment brought by Hard High Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey. It's time to take a look at the diamonds in the rough. The Saints also agreed to terms in the first wave of UDFAs with 16 undrafted free agents. Who stands out on that list, Mike?
I don't have any secret knowledge that every fan, as soon as they saw the positions that they play and the quick bios have here. I mean, I was doing a piece that's also on the website where I looked at the entire depth chart and after the draft. And before they started signing the undrafted free agents, I said they didn't draft a tight end, which was one of the biggest surprises of me this entire draft. I thought that was a sure thing, going to get drafted at some point position. So I said, whatever undrafted free agents they bring in are going to have a great opportunity. Well, they only signed one so far, and it was a guy that I think a lot of people expected to get drafted around round six or so, and that's Dallin Holker from Colorado State. Undersized, that's probably why he didn't get drafted, but here we have a coaching staff that loves that hybrid. I mean, maybe he could be the Juszczyk type of guy. He's not going to be a he's going to be a pass catcher first over a blocker, but just incredible hands, incredible production as a pass catcher. I tweeted out, I go, I'm booking him now. I'm booking him like just after the tweet came out that he's joined the Saints. That's my pick to make the 53-man roster. So you got like that. You know, I talked forever about them drafting Torrey Taylor, the Iowa punter. They didn't. They would have had to go up early in round four to do that.
Yeah.
So Matt Hayball, the punter from Vanderbilt, he had a draftable grade on him, another Aussie-style punter. That was my argument for Torrey Taylor is I think they love the style more than they love Lou Hedley himself. This guy can do the same style better than Lou Hedley. I'm almost going to predict him to make the team. And then they got a Jermaine Jackson, the return specialist, the Rashigi, the Deontay Hardy, four return touchdowns in college. Barely 5 foot seven, might even be listed at 5 foot six. So he'll be interesting to watch. I know you pointed out something about Mason Tipton from Yale too, Nick.
Yeah, I liked him. He had a 4.340 time. I'm assuming that's somebody that was probably pretty coveted around the league. I'm trying to see if I can find Hayball's hang time from last year.
It was low. It was 3.81.
So I mean that's just an Aussie style punter type thing. I'm going to make kind of two little homer mentions here. Like, I like Sincere Haynesworth. Like, I know him as a person. Like, he's just seems like a great guy to kind of have around. Yeah. Great personality. Somebody that was a team leader at Tulane and just kind of having some knowledge about some of the stuff he did to kind of keep people on point. I don't know, you know, how that translates, but it's good personality trait to have in the locker room. Kyle Sheets, Erie, PA native, got to shout him out. but I think my guy really would be. You mentioned Holker, like Holker would probably be, if we had to put money on somebody making the team today, he's probably the one that I put the money on, just because the skill set and the opportunity at that spot. But I mean, man, Tipton, and it's going to be really hard to make the team at wide receiver. But being a 4.3 guy, and then I was watching some of his highlights. Like, I haven't done a deep dive on any of the UDFAs yet, but that's something that kind of stands out a little bit. Is just natural ability, I think, is something that just can't be overlooked. And then, you know, I like Miller Bradford's athletic profile, 4.42 guy, safety. Like, there's opportunity
at safety.
Yeah, he doesn't tackle very well, but you know, maybe that's something that gets cleaned up. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we haven't gotten the full list of signing bonuses either, and that's also kind of telling of like it's a literal pecking order of what they think of him going in. A lot of times, guys that or on the lower end end up surprising and making the team. It doesn't ultimately mean anything, but I think those are the guys. Cabote too, man, the running back from Louisiana, he averaged like 5 yards a carry. Like, there's opportunity there too at that position, I think. So that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah, those are some of the names that are getting mentioned in the chat right now. Cabote, of course, he went to ULL. Then you got Holker.
Whoa, Louisiana, man.
Louisiana?
Yeah, don't start nothing.
No, ULL is Louisiana.
Don't start nothing. We are Louisiana. We say Louisiana here. Do not start nothing. Do not start nothing. They will come for you.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm from down here, man.
My wife went there. She's a raging Cajun.
Yeah, but if you were an Cajun athlete, there's the athletics name and there's the school name. All right. Look, we don't.
I got you.
We don't want nothing.
I got you.
We want no problems.
I understand. But if you want the best coverage in the entirety of Louisiana and the entirety of the country, make sure you subscribe to NewOrleans.football. We're going to hit a quick break, and then we'll be right back after this.
Shrimp remoulade combos are back at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company. Zesty shrimp remoulade served with fried shrimp, catfish, or soft shell crab starting at $10.99. Or try one of our spring specials, catfish Lafitte, or lemon caperfish with crab meat now at New Orleans Hamburger and Seafood Company.
Are you tired of renting and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel-select bourbon,
whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge. Or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Welcome back to our studio at Veterans Memorial Boulevard. It's now time for our next segment brought by Jouer Productions. If you need anything production-wise, Jouer is the people to go with. What positions do the Saints still need to address with veteran free agents?
Well, they just got two today. They signed the two offensive linemen, and it's kind of interesting there, Shane Lemieux and Justin Heron. Justin Heron?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, they were represented by former Saints center.
Charles Bentley.
Yeah, he started an agency, AMDG Sports, and he scouted them coming out of college, ended up signing them. So it's kind of interesting that they did that. You know, for me, it would have been offensive line at the top. I don't know if this fully addresses it. I think you could still add another guy, but it gives them a little bit of depth there. I think safety is a position that they're going to look at seriously and try to find somebody else. I don't think they're set at that position by any means.
It's a good one
means.
To be looking for. I mean, the market, still a who's who of names out there.
The market was bad. Your post-draft, I think the market gets suppressed a little bit, and that's something that they could definitely add at. We got defensive end and tight end listed up here. I mean, I don't think you need a D end at this point. I think they're okay at that spot. I don't think you're going to get anyone that changes the game at this point. So I don't think that you add there. I think you could still add another tight end, though.
Yeah, I mean, but they didn't draft a defensive end, and they didn't draft a tight end. They didn't draft a safety. And I think, yeah, I mean, some of those you could argue they were more draft needs. Get younger. Think about the future. I don't know that you go in and bring in the Andrus Pete of defensive ends just to add. I mean, like we've said a bunch, there's room to upgrade there, but they don't just need a seventh guy competing for playing time there. Safety is really interesting to me. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know that the door is still open for Marcus May. I bet Marcus May is going to sign a veteran minimum deal somewhere because he's like the eighth most accomplished veteran safety still out there. So you can get a guy if they decide to do that. You know, offensive line, the first two names that we thought, well, three names that we thought of were you've been talking about Mekhi Becton a lot. We've been talking about Andrus Pete a lot. Mekhi Becton signed right away with Philadelphia. And that was like $5.5 million I saw. I don't know if that's real money, up to money, but a little more than some guys normally get at this stage. And Dalton Risner is another one. He's a guard who started for a long time and actually started for Clint Kubiak when they were with the Broncos, when Clint Kubiak was at the Broncos. But going out and bringing these two veterans in today at what I assume to be minimum salaries, I mean, maybe the Saints are just going to continue that we're just not spending money on backups philosophy this year. That it's making me think, you know, it's making me think Hunter Renfro is not going to get that call at wide receiver, and Andrus Pete is not going to get that call on the offensive line. Maybe they spend on like one guy. Maybe some guys have to be a phone call away if people get hurt this summer. But when they sign two veteran offensive linemen, and look, they're not neither Heron. Nor Lemieux. I mean, when you're going to read their bios, you're not going to get enthusiastic about them, but they are guys who started previously in the NFL. So, you know, they're the veteran options. I mean, those signings would surprise me if you're doing that right before you plan to sign Andrus Pete, Dalton Risner or something.
Would you say Justin Simmons, you can get him for like $5 million. Would you do it?
Him? Yes. Justin Simmons might be one of all the free agents left on the list, though. Like, I don't know that there's anyone else out there that I'd pay $5 million for.
Justin Would you do Simmons? Six?
For Justin Simmons? I haven't. I don't know.
For sake of reference, Tyron comes out at 6.8.
Right, but I just don't understand why Justin Simmons is in the position he's in now. Like, I can't speak. The idea of Justin Simmons, he's an upgrade. Like, he's very recently was playing better football than Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, we were talking about Pro Bowl, All-Pro level safety. He's universally praised as a great teammate. I don't know if somebody knows something about an injury. I don't understand why Justin Simmons is unsigned. Is he waiting till someone pays him $10 million? I have no idea, but I mean, yeah, he's the best player, I think, unsigned in the NFL right now.
I have a feeling that he was probably looking for market-siding money because he's widely considered like the best safety in the league. And I don't think that, you know, I think if he was looking for $9 million that CJ Gardner-Johnson got, like he would have got $9 million. I don't think he would have had trouble getting that. I think he just played his hand to where he was like, no, I'm not playing for less than I'm worth. And then the league just kind of moved on and then the offer didn't come. You know what I mean? Like, I think he was waiting for something commensurate with his talent level. And if he wants to play, like, I think he's going to have to take a lot less. He's going to have to do a one-year deal somewhere.
I think I'm going to say no, though, the more I've thought about it. That we've had this conversation since the beginning of the offseason. Like, you're paying to make the 2024 team better if you do that. A lot better. Great player. But I told you, I've been head versus heart all offseason, but I've been proud of them for not – they have not spent any resources on 2024 only. Everything they've done has an eye toward the future as well.
What if you could get him on like a 2-year, $16 million deal where most of the money's in year two and it's kind of an option and you can kind evaluate where you're at and if it's worth paying next year and you're keeping like $6 million in this year and $10 million kicked in next year.
He would be a guy worth suspending.
I don't think he'd sign it, but...
Yeah. But what I was going to say is the only other place that I was willing to invest in, because you made a good point about you got to keep Derek Carr upright, you got to make sure the offense works, is the offensive line. But Justin Simmons feels like a luxury, but I'll make an exception for a player that good, maybe.
I have trouble saying no to it if you can get him for cheap. Like, if you could get him for like $9 million, I would have trouble saying no.
I don't want to spend the money on Odell Beckham, though.
No, like, neither do I.
Like, Justin Simmons is a little look, if they let Marshawn go and they're saving that money and then they add Justin Simmons to the secondary, a one-for-one swap, it would make even more sense.
So Justin Simmons in a second-round pick? That's like a good trade.
And saving that future cap space. So I don't know. Interesting, though.
It's hard, man, because like I want them to go. Like, it's like if that's there, I'm like, man, you got to do it. But there's been so much like a reserved nature to the offseason, and I kind of like it. I kind of like that they're being realistic about it. But it's like,
they've
damn,
even
if he's
shown
there.
More restraint than I, you know, like I don't know if I could show as much restraint.
You signing Simmons?
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He was good in Denver. He's really good. And I think I'm testing out, not for the same money, but I'm trying to see what Quandre Dix could do too. You got to kick the tires and see what people still got, man.
Jamal Adams, Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, Quandre Dix, Micah Hyde. Then you get Tracy Walker, Marcus May, Adrian Phillips. I mean, some of these guys are probably dealing with injury issues, but man, oh man, the safety position took it hard this offseason.
The thing that hurts me so much about him, though, is like I keep thinking, and it's like, damn, they gave up 70 with him playing safety, like to the Dolphins.
Okay.
Like, how much of a difference is it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason. Yeah. I think that's part of the reason the safety market.
You can't ignore it.
Yeah, it's just such a. I don't know. It would be tough, though. It would be tough to say no at the right price.
Yeah, for the right price, you got to test it out.
Yeah.
You got to test it out. That'll take us to our Martin's Wine and Spirits question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of hand-picked barrel-select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's, so much more than just wine. This question comes from Joseph Dex, a.k.a. Daxy. What was more to blame last year, Carr or the O-line?
It's an easy answer for me. It's the offensive line.
You think so?
Yeah, because the offensive line did two things wrong. The offensive line got Carr killed in the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, that's the worst pass protection we've seen from this offense. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just the offensive line. All pass protection, period. Pete Carmichael, obviously, was to blame, too. They cleaned that up, and they got better. But the one thing they never cleaned up all year long was the NFL's 31st-ranked rushing offense in
yards. Yeah, fair. Okay. Yeah, okay.
It was second and 10. You know, Derek Carr was playing, taking the ball behind center on second and 10 all year long. And, like, they eventually figured some things out on this offense. But for a while, and they got him hurt, and that injury took him a long time to come back for. So I'm not exonerating Derek Carr, but nobody's winning with the performance we saw from that offensive line last year. I think it was the biggest downfall of the whole team.
I was going to maybe go a different direction with it because they didn't give up as much pressure as it felt like when you actually look at the numbers. But the points you made there are incredibly astute. I mean, like, being in second and long, third and long is just – it's a losing proposition for the quarterback. And one of the things we heard Clint Kubiak say that I really liked a lot is just kind of that, you know, they don't want to be trying to – and it was about the red zone, but it was just like they don't want to be trying to score on third and long or whatever. Like,
you said score on your base downs.
Yeah, they want to do that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a whole philosophy that I think helps. And I don't think we're going to see the second and 10 run because of it. Thank God. Like, it was the worst thing they did. But yeah, I think you nailed all that for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Congratulations to me.
Yeah, for sure. I'm about to say, I mean, at first I was going to say, oh, it was Carr, but.
Oh, man.
But you were able to compel
so
me because.
I'm going to try to change people's opinions on Twitter all night now.
But when you put in.
Derek one of one.
When you put in the rotation of players at offensive line, and you put in some people who were put in positions where they might not have been ready to play, and then you put in the stale play call, and then, you know, I can't absolve. Derek,
yeah, the answer to this question is all and every.
Yeah.
And yeah, like Derek Carr wasn't good enough. The young receivers weren't doing their job early in the season enough. Pete Carmichael wasn't doing his job well enough. I mean, all of it. But if I had to pick the number one thing they need to most improve on, it's their offensive line.
Yeah, in a pie, the offensive line is definitely the biggest piece of that pie. So that'll do it for this episode. We hope y'all enjoyed this one. If you want more, subscribe to NewOrleans.Football. If you haven't, even through all the draft coverage, what are you doing? Be sure to check us out Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Keep it locked right here. Check you later.